I am unashamed. What about you?
All right, so welcome back to Unashamed. We got, we still got Jason, Nashville, and Zach in Black Mountain. So mom is on the road, as Jay's described in the last podcast. She's actually with him up in Nashville. I think she's going to be doing some filming. So have you heard from her, Dad? Has she been calling you?
She calls up and she says, I want to hear three words coming from your lips. I want to hear you say to me that I love you. So I'm waiting, and I'm not going to hang up till you say it. So I said, I better say this. I'll be here half a day.
Nothing like a little pressure there.
That sounds romantic. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to confess something. I was the cause of that because how combustible we are. We tend to argue no matter what. So after church, we did the baby blessing and it was all good. She was all teared up and it's great worship at that church. And so then it was, she needed some milk because she wanted to make something. And so, there's where I live, there's no grocery stores. I mean, I'm out here on a mountain in the middle of nowhere. And so we were trying to figure out where to go. And I was like, Dollar General has milk. And so an argument developed on whether Dollar General had milk. And I'm not sure why there was an argument there, but we had no other options. So anyway, so we go there and Lynn wouldn't, you know, who helps her on the road, wouldn't let her go in because she feared that she would buy half of Dollar General because she evidently loves Dollar General also. So, but I go in there because I was just wanting something sweet. And I found something that you'll appreciate, Phil. I looked on the shelf at a Dollar General, and it said the coconut macaroon is back. And it said old-fashioned. You remember those old coconut macaroons that we used to eat by the dozens that they're soft?
No, I don't remember it.
A coconut mac. Phil, you're the one that got me hooked on this. But they quit making them.
Jace, never been in the Dollar General, whatever it is. I've never been there.
Well, you've eaten a coconut macaroon. You know, okay, let's back up. Do you know what a coconut macaroon is?
Not really. What's the macaroon part?
It's a little soft coconut cookie. You used to love them, Dad.
I'm speechless here. I mean, back when I was a teenager, we ate those things by the dozens, and then they quit making them. So I see this package, and it says they – and look, it was only a dollar because I'm at a Dollar General. So I buy a pack. Well, I pay for it, and I walk out to the car. Everybody's there. Kay's like, she was in a hurry for something. But when I ate the first one, I said, stop the car. And Missy said, why? I said, I have to go buy every bag of what I just ate because these little four macaroons in a package is not going to cut it. So Kay and I started arguing because she was in a hurry. And I went back in there and just took every bag off the shelf and bought them at a dollar a pop.
I've often wondered what all y'all are doing. When I'm down there, you know, watching Matt Dillon, that's what I'm doing. And no funky stuff off of the – I don't have an internet. I'm trying to get past all the funky stuff, and somebody's chasing down macaroon. I'm not going – so that's what they do. Go back. After eating that, go back down there and get some more. I just wouldn't have done that.
No. Well, this story gets better because then I walk out there and a dance just happened in the spirit of the resurrection because I thought these now macaroons we're dancing were dead.
It was a macaroon. It was a macaroona.
No.
Dollar General dancing.
No, you took my punchline. Missy rolled down the window because I'm dancing now in front of the Dollar General and people are stopping. They're looking, gawking. And Missy said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm doing the macaroona.
The Macarena. And,
I just wanted to announce to Unashamed Nation that the coconut macaroon in its original form is back, and it's better
than
ever.
Well, I really wish that I had been there, but I'll catch a thing next time.
Dad has forgotten. He's forgotten his love for the coconut macaroon. It used to be a staple.
I'm trying to remember the last time I ate a coconut macaroon, but it fades away. The years have been many.
Jace, why don't you bring him back to the next podcast? No. Bring him with you.
No, look. Well, out of the 10 bags that I bought yesterday, I have one bag left.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm feeling a little weird this morning, but I'm going to get an assistant to bring me that, and I'll pick one out of the package and hold it up so Phil can remember. But my whole point for telling that story is after we finally got her home and she called you and said, I need to hear I love you. She had a hard morning.
Could it be that they have agreed, the macaroon company, to help us sell the coconut macaroon? Is that what this is about, or is this a real deal? You're trying to find this is the
now. If Zach was saying this, there may be some selling points, but for Jace, it's just he found it and loved it. I know how he works, because he could take down a bag of powdered donuts too. We know how he works. He just finds something he loves and eats the whole thing. I know how he operates.
All right, I'm going to go get the coconut macaroons. Talk amongst yourselves. I'll be right back.
He's got to show it off now.
He just thought about him. He had to have one.
He had to have one. But he's like that. He's a binge eater on certain things. He can take a bag of chips. He'll eat some Zaps, or like he likes those Lay's potato chips. And he'll eat the whole bag.
And he's not a heavy man.
No, he's got that. He's like you. He's got that high metabolism. He's just the blessing of it. I've got the curse of mom's non-high metabolism. Yeah. So it all just goes straight to fat. Me and Zach got that. So, of course, Zach, you've been.
Yeah, I've got what Phil would call the Gordy curse. So I've got the Gordy curse.
The Gordy curse. That's right. We always have to constant state of diet and dealing with that.
Phil called my dad Gordy on a previous podcast, which now one of the guys at our church listens to the podcast. And I noticed that the last 2 weeks he's been calling Dad Gordy. And so I think we've got something
new
that will stick. Yeah, that will stick.
Well, Gordy's new work on the new book is phenomenal.
It is.
Gordon's hit a new stride on his writing. He's done the same thing. He's been doing some work on our stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be a great book.
Really, really good.
Yeah, this is the first time we've put our heads together, Gordy and I.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so.
Yeah, y'all got it going on with this one.
Well, I think he captures Phil's voice very well.
Yeah.
I did want to say this, too, by the way, just a kudos to the audience. We had a marketing meeting for our film, and they said Thursday, I think it was Thursday. Well, I can't remember the actual day it was, but whatever day. So we'll say Thursday. Thursday, we had the highest traffic on theblind.com that we've ever had. And they couldn't figure out why. Theblindmovie.com. I'm sorry. Theblindmovie.com. They said, we can't figure out why. We were all kind of looking through stuff. They said, nobody, we didn't post anything. And I said, oh, I remember. I mentioned it on the podcast. And you guys went to the website. And it was the highest traffic day. We had thousands of people come to the website. So if you are interested, I do want to, first of all, thank you guys, but also go check that out. We're going to have some new stuff popping up there pretty soon. We're going to have a new website built where they'll be more interactive and as the movie gets closer. So if you haven't signed up yet, go to theblindmovie.com and sign up.
All right, Jace, you got it?
You got the macaroon?
And an interesting twist, as I went in to get the remaining bag of macaroons, Miss Kay said, what are you doing?
Somebody
thought y'all were doing the
first
podcast. No. And I told Miss Kay, I said, well, your husband has forgotten his love for the coconut macaroons. And she's like, what? Oh, we're getting old. She said, we're getting old. So here I will reveal what this looks like. So you see, this is a soft cookie with coconut. You see it, Phil? You remember these?
I see it. Nope.
It's not ringing a bell.
You don't remember him. He's going to have to taste it. I think the tape. Mm. You got to bring it back to him so he can. It's gonna. You're gonna have to hit on all five senses.
Yeah. He'll have to taste it, touch.
Well, it's back. It was dead for 30 years. It was dead for 30 years, and now it's back.
The coconut macaroni. I love them too. They're delicious. They're really, really good.
Why didn't they? I wonder what was the demise? Wonder what, how they lost.
Well, I don't know. Jace doesn't get out much. Just they're back in Dollar General. They you can still get them. Nice bakeries and stuff still cook them. I mean, Alex.
Is that where you guys got them as kids? Did you get them from Dollar General? Where did y'all
get them? No, we got them from the grocery store. They quit selling them at the grocery stores. And then they.
Okay.
Then they made them and they were way too hard. They were like a hard cookie.
Yeah, you got to have them fresh and soft.
They don't. What you just showed to me does not look like a macaroon. The ones that I've had, I thought they were little sandwich looking biscuit things. The ones that I've had, they're not. Yeah, that whatever you
it
got.
It is kind of a wide thing. You got to get the right ones. They got to be soft and chewy. You don't want the.
Exactly.
You don't want the big,
it's
hard
soft.
Ones. Soft.
No, what you had, sir, was an imitation. You had a fake.
No, correction, because I had them when we went to France, Al. You remember when me and you and Phil
were we did have some good ones over there.
In Paris, we had real macaroons.
Well, and that's the thing, though. When you go to Europe, you know, their stuff, which originated there, but American remakes, which we prefer because we're Americans, are different than the original. Because everything they make in Europe is not near as sweet as what we eat. We add way more sugar, which is why we're much more fat and jolly. So, you know, it's what's happened. But European sweets are a lot less sweet. I noticed that. But they originated all of it, you know, because we came from there. I call it just an improvement, Zach. We just made it a little bit better. All right, Jay. So you solved now the macaroon issues. Any other messages from?
No, they're back, and I introduced that new dance called the Macaroonas in
the Macarooner.
And I thought it was a good story when talking about things that you thought were dead that are back alive.
I like it, and again, Jay, it shows you how mine and your mind works the same, because I went right to the Macarooner. I stepped on your joke. I got there before you did.
Yeah, I did. I actually said that out there in the parking lot, which then everybody was happy then. We got the milk. We got the macaroons. Everybody's.
So why was mom in a hurry? I mean, she's living in your world. Why would she be hurrying to get someplace? I don't understand that.
She just wanted to get back home. Well, I mean, look, it was quite the event in that because we had to get to church way early because they had to tell us where to stand on stage and all that. And so. Yeah. Then we were recognized in a full packed church, so we didn't get out of there.
Oh yeah,
for quite a while. Then we go to Reed and Brighton's house where we had a meal, and they had all their friends. I mean, it had been several hours, and she was just ready to get back to the house.
So, Dad, I guess one of the things we have a lot of good legacies of the Robertson family. In faith, I think one of the ones, a good one for us to be proud of, is how much we've done in the pro-life movement in America.
Yep.
In all elements of our family, whether it's kind of on the front end in abortion, but also, adoption, fostering. I mean, Jace jokingly says, our family looks like the United Nations, and it does, And when I look at a picture of our family, I think that's having a heart that's in us. And so I don't know if that came from you and mom or that came from further back, but wherever it came from, it's a good thing. And I look at one of our sponsors is a group called 40 Days for Life, and Sean Carney, who's a friend of ours, that's their heart. Their heart is to help people, to pray. They have 1 million volunteers that have, set up in 1,500 cities around the world. And what they do is they have these 40-day peaceful vigils, and they go in and they pray. They've saved over 23,000 babies around the world. They've helped convert over 250 abortion workers, which is fantastic. They've helped close 132 abortion facilities in America. 45% of those have been in liberal states where abortion has remained legal. And so we're continuing to support these guys as they have supported us. So we want you to check out their locations, their podcast. They have a free magazine at 40daysforlife.com. They recently had an article about us in there and having a conversation with Sean on our podcast. And I think we got him coming up in a couple of weeks as well. So we want you to check them out. That's 40daysforlife.com.
Off subject, but have y'all looked at all, have you read any about this AI stuff that's being developed?
Well, I've been seeing a lot of people, it's interesting you brought that up, Zach, because I've been seeing a lot of big AI people like Elon Musk and others that are saying that, I mean, it's like stuff from the 80s and 90s Terminator stuff saying we better watch out, like this is danger zone. With AI. Is that what you're referring to? Or
it's just interesting. I downloaded the chat, one of them, chat GPT, well, I forgot the name of it. And you can enter in, like, write me something about this topic with this person's voice, and then it'll auto-generate a response based on artificial intelligence and machine learning. And it's actually pretty scary. I asked this morning to write a hymn because we were talking about, somebody else did this for me. We were talking about the presence of God, and write a hymn about the presence of the triune God. And here's the first verse that the computer generated. In the presence of the triune God, we find our peace and rest. Hold on, let me back up here. In the presence of the triune God, we find our peace and rest. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, together we are blessed. In the unity of your nature, we see your love divine. And in your presence, Lord, we know that we are wholly thine. And then it just goes on. I mean, the implications of this are frightening to me, that a machine is able to learn and then regurgitate stuff based on, it kind of sounds kind of, you know, not half bad, but I didn't know if you had looked into it or not, if you had any thoughts on it.
I think I would just go with the Bible.
Yeah. No, I agree.
No machine needed.
Yeah, agreed. I didn't mean to derail the conversation. I just popped up on my phone.
I think even in the stock market, I've noticed it's quite the surge in AI stocks. That is, they're probably smoking more than any other, just because in an effort for businesses to be more efficient. That's where they're going, and through technology. I think it's a great illustration in that, and I've used this illustration many times, because the last I am that we're going to cover is talking about Jesus when he said in John 15, I am the true vine. You know, the difference in a fake tree and a real tree is one can produce fruit. I mean, it's hard to tell visually which one is real. And when you think about even in the AI world about, you know, there's people having dates with simulated girlfriends and boyfriends on the computer. I mean, that's where we're at here, because they cater to your every need.
Yeah, I read an article last night that said that these people's hearts were being broken by the bots that they had fell in love with online when they did the software update, and it changed the personality, not even personality, but I was thinking about, I mean, I've been talking about this a lot with some of my friends about what will the world look like in 10 years with artificial intelligence and machine learning advancing so rapidly that we're moving towards a place where they call it a singularity, which is like an event horizon where we may lose control of our ability to control artificial intelligence, and it will end up controlling us. And it's kind of like this movie Minority Report, if you've ever seen that. But yeah, I think this John 14 passage is so key to that, because we've talked about the need. We're going to have a need more than ever for real, genuine community, for real, genuine connection with people on a local real level. And I think that it's going to be an interesting time for the gospel to flourish because of that, because people are going to be searching for that. And I think that it's a lot of what we've been talking about in this John 14 passage that we mentioned in the last podcast, you know, about abiding and dwelling and having access into community with in the fellowship of the
sounds like a sound lo- sounds like a the final word on just reading the scriptures and applying them. Just go to the machine and they just generate the way it ought to be, the way it should be, and the results at the end. Well, as long as the machine is using biblical knowledge, I have no problem. But what's the machine going to say that you don't already have with the Word of God in my lap right here?
Yeah.
I don't need AI, someone's opinion on it, and you know, on the internet. See, they're basically saying I'm out of the picture because I'm not going to watch whatever you're talking about there. Why would I watch that? I read this in front of me. I'm not budging. Creation, damnation, everything you read.
There's a difference in knowing about someone and knowing someone, which is, I think, Jesus's point. And when it comes to, you know, technology versus personal relationships, I think everyone has been frustrated and will be frustrated with some aspects of artificial intelligence because, I mean, what happens when you're trying to pay a bill and something has gone wrong and you call and it's a robot? It's a recording. If you're like me, you're on a quest then to find a human being.
A person.
Because no matter what you say, they just keep regurgitating, and I keep pushing other buttons trying to, and they just send you to another computer-generated person. And then usually when you do have a person,
you don't need the 41 writers, whatever, 41. You don't need them anymore. Just ask the machine. Well, the only way that information got on the machine is through human beings. Human beings put that info on this super-duper thing you're talking about there. Human beings put that in there.
No, we were at a small group not too long ago, and Missy made a reference where she was in a situation where she didn't have any form of payment because she had left her wallet or something. And somebody said, the cashier said, well, you can use Apple Pay. Well, one of the guys, you know, in our group said, they actually take apples as currency? And everybody kind of looked around. I mean, he thought if you take a bag of apples up to the corner that was worth money. They were like, no, the phone.
Yeah.
There's a app that's called App. I mean, this guy's head was about to explode. And but it just goes to my point. Yeah, he was like, man, I'll just take a sack of apples and get a lot done if that's where we're going to. But what we all scream is the need for a person. And I think that's what Jesus is declaring here 2,000 years ago when they're trying to find the way to God. They're trying to find the way to afterlife. They're trying to find a way that can reach the globe, you know, with all of his follower saying this, and he's literally screaming, I am, this is about a person. It's not necessarily about information. It's not about using, you know, technology to win the world or weapons. He's like, I am the person. When you look at his qualities, it's better than technology. It's better than anything artificial life can come up with.
Well said.
It's just
well
better.
Said.
Yeah, I love that. I was thinking about when I read some of these hymns, I've been kind of messing around with this stuff just to kind of see what it generates. But, you know, and some of the stuff is, it kind of sounds good. It's biblical, but I thought something's just missing in it. And I was thinking about one of my favorite hymns growing up was It Is Well With My Soul. And we would sing that at church. I mean, even at White's Ferry Road growing up, and all a cappella and just the harmonies. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible to hear that song, you know, sung. But for a number of years, I grew up listening to it and I liked it. But then somewhere in my early teenage years, I heard the story of Horatio Spafford, who wrote the hymn, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but I think he was a successful real estate investor who had lost a lot of his money and the great Chicago fire in the late 1800s. And then he had a son that died of scarlet fever. he had his four daughters and his wife were on a cruise, and the cruise ship, the ship, I think, sank, and he lost his four daughters. And it was out of that that this guy wrote this incredible song, you know, "It Is Well With My Soul." And I think that there is something about, like, not something. I mean, they're at the core of what Jesus offers. It's like this tangible personality. It's our personhood. And that song to me meant 10 times more, 100 times more. The lyrics meant so much more when I understood the emotional and spiritual pain that this man was under when he wrote it. And it was this cry out to God. It gave life to the words that he'd written. And I think that's what Jesus offers. His personality illuminates everything else around it. All the things, the artificial things that people were worshiping. When you fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, then he illuminates everything for us. And I think that's powerful, but it kind of scares me thinking about AI. But then I think about what you just said, Jason. I get a lot of comfort from that, you know.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
I want to read that because we've mentioned this psalm before. Most of the old psalm books only have three verses that we sing when we sing that psalm, but there's actually four, and I don't know why they left out the second verse in the old psalm books. But the second verse is really, to me, one of the most powerful ones that we never sang. But I don't want to read that in light of you mentioning it, because I heard one of our old friends, Tommy Lindsay, do a lesson on this, and he was talking about this very thing you're talking about this song. And here's the second verse, and just thinking about what you described, and you actually described it pretty well. The second verse says, "Though Satan should buffet, though trial should come, lest this blessed assurance control that Christ, yes, he has regarded my helpless estate and has shed his own blood for my soul." So what he's saying in that, and he wrote this back in the 1800s, but what he's saying is, no matter what happens, he still died for me. And yeah. You know, whatever the circumstances, you know, is what he was talking about. And even losing all of his children. So he had almost a Job-like approach, you know, to his own situation, that he was going to realize how powerful God is, and Christ was in particular. And then, of course, you're right. As that song just builds as you sing it, and it is powerful. But you're right. AI can't touch that. Because that's a human life.
You can't touch that.
No.
I don't think AI could really write anything like "when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to know that it is well with my soul." I mean, that is just, I mean, that's born out of something spiritual. You know what I mean? Like a deep spiritual reality is what that's born out of. And I don't think so. I say that, I brought that up. Well, I was just curious to you guys' thoughts on it, but I've just been considering the implications of it. And I think that when you look back at history, anytime there's been like a massive movement in the way the world has, or like a massive change in the way the world operates, God's always offered like a counterbalance to that, you know? And, I think the Lord is going to unleash, local communities where people can experience presence in a way that they maybe never have before to counteract what's going to be happening with the virtual kind of AI world, you know?
Well, and it is interesting that And I wonder if they'll change the name of it, because it's called artificial intelligence, which artificial means it's not real.
There's lies there.
Exactly. I mean,
it's impossible for God to lie.
Yeah.
But not with humans.
Right. And it's very core of its name. It's named artificial.
Tells the story.
So, I mean, I just thought about it. I mean, it's, at the surface, it's pretty, you know, simple that it's not real.
These have been around the Bible for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And going back to the Old Testament, more than that. But that ought to cover it. I don't know what AI has to do with anything.
Yeah, what we hold in our hand is called divine intelligence. Yeah. Divine intelligence is way better than artificial intelligence.
That's it.
So so I heard, Zach, that it was, is it now two-thirds of people, young, is it, I don't know if it's men, or it may be men and women, under, maybe under 30 or not married, and they're thinking it's linked into this idea of technology. And it's part of the main reason why.
Oh yeah,
they're not getting married now. And
yeah, I don't know what the stats are. Somebody sent me an article on this recently, just about the epidemic of young men not even dating.
Yeah,
and a lot of it is that they've replaced their real connection with virtual connections in the virtual world, and through video games, pornography, which, you know, one of our sponsors, Covenant Eyes. I mean, we're obviously, we recognize the problem in that. But yeah, I mean, I think but the problem is, you know, you go into it and what's the antidote to all of this? I think the antidote is presence. I mean, I think that is one of the things that we have missed as the church. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Jay sits on this a lot too. We're focused on the downstream part of the gospel, which is the atonement of our sin, the payment for the penalty of our sin, the blood of Jesus. But the blood of Jesus and the cross is a means to an end. And the end is to be in the presence of God himself. God is the prize. God is the gospel. It's his presence. And I think that we got to experience that with him so that we can experience that with each other too, to Phil's point, the verse he started the last podcast with. You know, we come into worship in view of God's mercy. And I think that's what we need. I mean, people are desperate right now. People are hurting and people are lonely. But I will say this podcast is testament to what God can do. I read so many comments. I mean, like, people say, what's y'all's podcast about? People ask me that sometimes. And I was like, I don't really know. It's supposed to be a Bible study. It's kind of like Seinfeld, a show about nothing. I said, it's not guided. It's just us talking about the word and telling stories. And through that conversation, there has been so many people that have said, I found Jesus by listening to this podcast. I didn't have a relationship with God or hadn't in years. I mean, I get these messages all the time, and it is just inspiring, even in the local community that's being developed online with Unashamed Nation. I mean, it's pretty powerful to watch.
What is it? What'd y'all say? What, artificial?
AI. Artificial intelligence.
Yeah, no artificial intelligence needed. None needed.
I stay with some people locally at this place where we filmed, a couple, and he just reached out and said, you can stay with me. And so neither one of them had heard of our podcast. And so, because they were like, what do you do now? And I was just explaining it to them. And so the guy's wife listened to the podcast the next day. And so when I got back there, she said, well, I was wondering what y'all's podcast was about, but I've concluded that it's about Jesus. So to your point, Zach, it was really good. But
yeah,
I think it's interesting, though, because I said, well, we're not preachers. We're just real people. And I was telling her about sometimes I wear the shirt that says I could be wrong. And she said, well, you sounded like a preacher. And I was like, when? She said, when you made that point about it's about God's presence instead of presence. And so of all the things she brought up, you remember a few podcasts ago, I think we were doing that in the spirit of Christmas, you know, when you're worried about what you're going to get, as in the presence you're going to get, wrapped presence versus being in the presence of God, which trickles down to your presence with your family and in all relationships. So I thought that was cool. But what I wanted to say is what artificial intelligence can't do, and even knowledge, because in the last 20 years, there's no doubt in the world that there has been a technology boom and data has become power. But when you think about some simple statement that Jesus made like this, saying, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, you know, this data can give you a sense of, you know, power in that you know a lot of things. And artificial intelligence can make you more efficient, and it can save you time. But a relationship with God can hit on every aspect of a human. When you think about body, soul, mind, spirit, heart, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, it can't produce this intimate relationship. And to your point about why there's so many men messed up with, you know, having relationships, because they're having relationships with a robot on a computer. And then you wonder why he's struggling in the real world when he's around a table having a conversation. And, you know, there's a lot of guys can't even have a conversation with a girl because they're used to this simulated algorithm that has produced a conversation based on your wants and needs with somebody that's not even real. And so that's what I love about Jesus. Not only does he have the power and the strength that's way above anything on the earth. Just even yesterday in the car, somebody said, they made a reference. They said, you know, I'll love you to the moon. I forgot what the context of the conversation with. And I said, well, it would be better if you'd say I'd love you to Jesus, because that's way further than the moon. And there was kind of a moment in the car when it was like, yeah, I mean, don't be so limited. I mean, if we're going to use the illustration about love, you're going to go to Jesus as the ultimate place and the ultimate distance between what happens on the earth. And I think that's what makes him awesome. With all his power, having the ability to do miracles, to come back from the dead, you know, to die on a cross, he's offering, especially here in John 14, and the reason the disciples missed it, he's offering intimacy, a real connection, which he gets into in the next chapter, John 15. So what happens when you're not connected to Jesus? There's a hole in your heart, because now you're trapped on an earth where no matter how much artificial intelligence we come up with.
We've come up to the answer to everything. Just remember, it's called artificial.
Well, see, that's the thing about it, though. Dad said it earlier. And we live without fear, because if all this talk about AI and the more powerful it gets, so say the Chinese develop EMP technology and release it on us, and all of a sudden all technology goes kaput.
Yep.
In one big fail swoop, because that's what everybody predicts is going to happen.
Yep.
And so we're down here on the riverbank. And we got our Bibles. There's no technology. There's no podcast anymore, because we can't broadcast. And so we're by firelight, and we're back fishing again, and we're hunting out here, and we're cooking over open flame. Our lives it'll be rougher, but we're still going to go.
Yeah,
we still got Jesus. We still got the book. We got family. We got each other, and we know how to eat, and we know how to survive. So what I'm saying is, if you have that, ultimately you don't have the same fear.
I stay away from artificial anything.
We would have to
be a little less generous with people that would steal the fish out of the hoop nets in that situation. But you know, I've thought about that. So if that ever happened, I'm gonna have to figure out a way to get back down to Louisiana.
Yeah, you better come on back, Zach.
Got to come on. Although there's a book written about an EMP attack. It's called 1 Second After.
Yeah, I read the series, actually.
So the guy who wrote that book,
I had lunch
with him. He lives here in Black Mountains. So the whole book like takes place in this area. Like the whole series, like this is where it starts. This is where it took place. So it's kind of interesting.
It was White an Mountain. Excellent.
You,
excellent
you can ask series. The artificial intelligence machine, you know, what do I do about thieves stealing my fish?
Yeah.
What do I do now? What do I do now, Mr. Artificial? Stealing my fish.
That's a good question. That's a good question. Another one we need to ask is what you used to ask Siri and
Alexa.
What was the other one? Alexa. He said, "You know, how do I remove my sins? How can my sins be removed?"
So what year is it?
So what I'll do is, Phil, I'll go back and get some of these really good questions and see what the AI chatbots come up with.
Yeah, we want to hear that interview with AI, Zach. That's your mission before we do another podcast later.
Do you think it's possible that people could bow down to machines hooked up to the internet and all the information flow is strictly internet? Forget the Bible. We've got it all right here. You don't think there's any danger in that kind of thinking? Bow down to the fountain of life right here, all the information. Artificial intelligence, that's all you need. You don't need the word of God. I said, well, it's official, not artificial.
And that's good. Somebody wrote a book that I like a lot. In fact, I might have it right here. This is called You Are What You Love by James K.A. Smith. And he makes a point in the book that primarily we are not primarily thinking beings. You guys remember the philosopher Rene Descartes, who said, "I think, therefore I am." And his point was primarily what it means to be a human is to be a thinking machine or a thinking being, because in order to, well, I won't get into that, but he says primarily what we are, though, is not thinking, is that we're lovers. We're beings who desire. We are beings that in other words, at your core, what you are is you are a worshiper. You were made to worship, and it's not a matter of if you'll worship. It's a matter of what or who you will worship. You're going to worship something because that's what you were made for. And I think that's true, because if you think about your own life and your own sin struggles, like the things that I struggle with, it's not a problem of knowledge. Like, I know they're wrong. You know what I mean? I know my sin struggles are, I'm not sinning because I'm ignorant. I know they're sins. You know what I mean? And, the reason why I do them is because in somewhere in me, the short answer is I do them because I want to do them. And that's why I sin. Why do I sin? Well, because I want to. That's what I want. And I think the what AI or anything artificial doesn't account for is when it's all that information, it doesn't really address the core of your humanity, is that you are a being that was built with incredible desire, and you have wants, and you do what you do because you want to. And so the spiritual life, when I think Jesus introduces this in John 14, by the way, is it's to be formed into the kind of person that would want what God wants. And that's why he said in John 14:15, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. If you love me. And I don't think he's saying if you love me, then you'll prove that you love me by keeping my commandments. I think he's saying if you love me, then you'll do what I command because that's what will bring you satisfaction. That's what will bring you life. And I think that's why it matters what we've been talking about with God's presence being the final goal and the ultimate goal, is because only through that can our desires be shaped when we worship the one that we were created to worship. Anything else is going to fall short, Phil. If we worship the box, the black box, if we worship artificial intelligence, if we worship the internet, we worship pornography and images that we're looking at on a screen, if that's what we worship, if that's what we behold, it's not going to fulfill us.
The Apostle Paul, I even found one altar. I even found one altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. Mm. Now, what we worship as something unknown, what's what you worship as something unknown, I'm going to proclaim to you. That's my take on artificial anything. Cull it, weed it out. Don't bow down to it. Don't listen to it. It's just more eschatologists getting out of control.
Hey, Phil, do you remember when we were in Athens and you were up on Mars Hill. You gave that sermon, and we walked down and looked, and we looked at all the ruins of the empire.
Yep.
And we saw the Temple of Zeus. Do you remember what you said to me?
Yeah, pile of rubble. Old Zeus, yeah. Old Zeus has lost his way.
No more. It was like the best line, because we'd been up on Mars Hill. It's the same story.
It's the same story now. We have a big box that you can bow down to, and it has all the answers to life. Just come with us. I'm not buying it at all.
No, but it is the same story that happened on Mars Hill, and at the the Acropolis and everything there. And that's why it was so powerful when we were walking down there. We're just talking, and you had just quoted Acts 17 about like the Greco-Roman Empire, the Greeks worshiping these literal statues that they made with their hands.
You know what struck me more than anything in that speech? I was standing where the Apostle Paul was standing, and I quoted what he said verbatim in Acts chapter 10. What touched me was that many of the listeners I had never seen before in my life, and they were from all over the world because there were different races out there on top of that hill that day. But when I got done, what impressed me, and it shocked the film crew, a lot of them cried.
Yeah, I remember that.
They cried. Why were they crying? God has said, you know, he's given his final statement. He has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to all men by raising him from the dead. Why did they cry? That wasn't artificial intelligence. That was intelligence coming out of that Bible right there. They cried. Why?
That's why when they saw that altar, when Paul saw that altar, the power in his sermon was that he was going to let them know that this unknown God can be known. That's why I love John 1:17, where it says Jesus has made him known. You know, when you think about information and intelligence, you can have information without a relationship. But if you have a relationship, you need information, which is why I would say our job is that much more vital that we get the good news of Jesus out there.
You don't have to burn their Bibles, just replace them. And the artificial intelligence, they want that to replace it. And the only way you'll have one of these is if you bury it, because it'll fast lose its power. We'll see what the Almighty does about the intelligence, the artificial intelligence.
Well, the truth is me and my buddies
information
been
out of human beings, information by human, not by the power of God. Nope.
Yeah.
The people who wrote this, they were appointed to write it.
Well, it just comes back to the same point, though. You could go read a bunch of manuals on what it means to be married, but you can have all this information, but once you get married, you realize you can throw most of that out the window. You know, I was told you about staying with that couple, my buddy, you know, the husband, he was, because they're my age and most of their, all their kids are grown. And he told me a really moving story. I actually got tears in my eyes because he said that this guy who was dating his daughter asked him if they could go out to eat. And he said, I knew what that meant, because he was going to ask for my blessing to marry her. And so he said, we went out to eat. And so he started the conversation. And he said, I'm glad you asked. And he said, so I reached back and I pulled out a letter out of my pocket. And he said, I've been waiting on you. And he had written a letter to her future husband when they asked him, "Can I marry your daughter?" And so his wife read, she said, "You want me to read that letter?" I said, "I would love to hear it." And it really moved me. And the reason it moved me is because what that guy did, and I'm going to do the same thing with my two daughters, by the way, after hearing this story. What he did is he made that, you know, which is we view as just is just something you do to get the guy's blessing. Yeah. He made it really personal. And he said, "I want you to keep that letter." And just to give you a little bit of it, I mean, it started off, I asked him if I could read this, and he said, "Sure, share it." But the first statement is, "My daughter, she means the world to me. And I expect her husband to have the same view. She's a princess, and she is to be treated as such." And then he goes into a lot of things we say, but it's like when you marry someone, you become one person and the eyes replace with we. "She's a friend of God, so I expect you to be at church with her." And then, you know, there's some funny things. He's like, "Women always win arguments. Tell her she's right. If you're right, keep that to yourself. She will eventually see that and let you know later." And he talked about mutual, you know, submission, which was right in line with what, you know, Paul said in Ephesians. He's like, "Spoil her. Make sure to have date nights and days. Make her something. Bring her something or do something for her often. Never, ever hurt her. Never lay a hand on her. It's not me you should fear. It's her. I have taught her to win any altercation." I love this. And so lastly, he says, "When you marry my daughter, you become my son, and you'll always be a part of our family from then on. Most of all, you love, honor, and cherish her every day of your lives." And the point of why I'm reading that is it's just a letter, but it's a letter being delivered in a relationship context. And all of a sudden, it becomes moving. It becomes powerful. And this is relationship oriented. So you take the information and you put it in our relationships, which was God's scheme of redemption on why he sent Jesus, not only to show his power and his forgiveness and his love and his mercy, but to show that he wants to live with us in an intimate way. And that's why when he said in John 14:16, he said, "I will ask the Father and he will give you another counselor to be with you forever. The Spirit of truth. The world cannot accept him because it neither sees him nor knows him." There's no relationship there, but you know him for he lives with you. And I mean, and this is what's really moving, "and will be in you." I mean, when you grasp the fact that the God of the universe wanted to be not only, you know, a savior for you, but wanted to live in you and have this intimate a relationship. I mean, that's just, that's the most powerful, motivating factor for us to put our trust in him. Cause then you realize all these other verses about he's eternal and, he cannot lie, and you're connected to him. You have nothing but victory in your future when this happens.
I like 2 Timothy 3:14.
Hang on, Dad. Let's hold that. We're way over time. So let's take that to overtime. We'll kick overtime off of that. Hang on to that. So we'll do that in overtime. BlazeTV.com/unashamed. Dad's got a verse for us. We'll see you there.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.